Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
All right. Well, welcome back. It would be nice to be able to kind of have a constitution we could cover in a few minutes, but government is a little bit more complicated. I really hate using that term because when you hear somebody like, there's some quote unquote conservative entertainer talk show hosts that say it's complicated, folks. And it really isn't that complicated. This is not rocket science. I'm sorry. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand the Constitution. And as a matter of fact, an idiot like myself is capable of understanding the nuances regarding some of these terms, clauses of the Constitution, because the ratification debates spell all this stuff out. You read the this goes back to my premise that if you read the scriptures so that you can understand the commandments and how to live a better life, you have to read the ratification debates to really understand the Constitution. There's way too many people that are too busy with that, but at least at a minimum, read the doggone Constitution. It doesn't take that long. I think this is our fifth or sixth show in the process. And I know in reading this, I editorialize, I go into emphasis. We've re-emphasized the Electoral College as well as the Guarantee Clause and other parts of the Constitution that we believe is really important for you to get. And as a matter of fact, technically, we haven't gotten through the Guarantee Clause because right now we're still in Article 4. You know what? My mistake. We are in Article 5. We have actually passed through and finished Article 5. See, when you get old, you start forgetting. So where we are next, actually in reading the Constitution, is we're heading into Article 6, and then we will hit Article 7. So the most important thing that I hope you're getting from this really isn't that complicated. You know, if you want a better understanding, read my articles. My articles kind of help you open up these concepts of a standing army and why the framers were so afraid of a standing army. Why do we have the 14th Amendment with these different and weird sections? And so that's one of the reasons why we're going to go through the amendments in this particular time or moving forward. Previously, I only read the Constitution, and I tried to get back to the Bill of Rights in December because that's when we celebrate the passing of the Bill of Rights. The fact of the matter is, or I should say, the submission of the Bill of Rights. What we really need to do is we really need to go through every single amendment to the Constitution so it gives you context. I've told you before that there are no amendments to this Constitution to grant the judiciary any form of writing or creating law and making law and or enforcing law. When they have stepped out and had basically made the presumption that this makes this thing legal, like whether it be homosexual marriage, whether it be health care, whether it be taxing a person because they're no longer consuming wheat because they're growing their own wheat, Wicker v. Filburn, then those types of things is how the court has been used and one creating law, aggrandizing federal powers, and thirdly, how they have been usurping states' rights, and actually, they have been a mechanism of tyranny amongst the people. And the interesting or the ironic thing, the branch that was considered the weakest of them all has actually done the most damage to how the states are functioning, how the federal government is operating. I mean, they've done way too many bad things. So Anyway, as you know, the show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. So now we get into Article 6. Article 6 basically has the Supremacy Clause, and it basically, and we already kind of covered this, but we'll cover it again, because I think there's merit in the coverage of Article 6. And I'm going to connect the irony or an interesting parallel between Article 6 and the 14th Amendment. So here we go. Article 6, all debts contracted and engagements entered into. So engagements, what the heck is an engagement when they're referring to this? Is this, you know, some type of marriage? Yeah, basically, if you understand it's an action, an engagement is maybe an activity, or it is an arrangement. So what they're basically saying in this very first portion of this first clause, all debts contracted and engagements entered into, these are only referring to treaties. Now, if Congress passed laws, so there's all these people out there that make this assumption that the Northwest Ordinance is, because the Northwest Ordinance, and this is really interesting, if you've never put two and two together, the Northwest Ordinance is a law that was put into place and ratified by the Continental Congress in October of 1787. Well, what happened in September of 1787? That's when they just signed the Constitution. So the Constitution, the ink was still wet, and at this point in time, they had no ratifications. I mean, they were just trying to get their arms around it. The country was trying to understand this, but Congress felt it important to pass the Northwest Ordinance. Now, so most people think that the Northwest Ordinance supersedes the Constitution, and what in the Northwest Ordinance is like an amendment to the Constitution, that certain things in there are supreme over the Constitution. That's not correct. If you really look, because a part of it was establishing using Bibles for education in the territories. It actually made the territories to be slave free. So I would highly recommend that one looks at the Northwest Ordinance, because you cannot really go through these documents without understanding that snapshot in time of how the Northwest Ordinance is, and the author, the original author of the Northwest Ordinance was Thomas Jefferson. So anyway, I just want to make sure that people understand that even though the Northwest Ordinance came after, it was not really an engagement. It was not a treaty. This was a kind of like a resolution that said, this is how we are going to function. This is how we're going to process and manage the territories and, you know, these Northwest territories and so forth as the Union started to expand. Well, the Constitution actually clarified a lot of that stuff right there in Article 4 regarding the management, the needful buildings in Article 1 and in Article 4 and so forth. And so there's way too many people that I've ran into that have clung to the Northwest Ordinance is scripture, it's doctrine. And I'm going, no, actually, there's some conflicts between the Constitution and the Northwest Ordinance. And the Constitution trumps that because it's not a debt, nor is it an engagement. This is not a treaty that we made. So one of the engagements that was actually in place was that treaty with Britain. And so once we formed this new republic, once we got rid of the Articles of Confederation, Washington actually sent emissaries to work out the details regarding the problems we were having with the British treaty. I've said this before. Britain never recognized that treaty because their point of contention was they wanted the property and the value of that property, a restitution from the loss of property of those people that were kicked out of the United States because of the Tory Acts. There's about 100,000 people that were kicked out because they were loyalists to Britain and they lost everything that they couldn't carry in their, you know, in their packs or boxes, whatever they could get out for shipping purposes. And if I remember correctly, I believe it was, who's the author? Who's the guy that wrote 1776? It's an Irish name, MacLean, or it eludes me now. He also wrote a book on John Adams, but he does a lot of really good research, and he pointed out that Ron Chernow was the one that pointed out that George Washington, who had very close ties with the Belvoirs, they were loyalist and sympathetic for the British cause, and they actually left the colonies to go back to Britain and all of the land and everything else, because Fort Belvoir is named after this guy that, you know, had all of these assets and so forth. And he was just one of many. And Britain wanted the monetary value of all of these things because, you know, they were all about the money and all about the bottom line. And I get it. But we said, no, these people do not have a right to property because they're, you know, they supported you. So bottom line, what ended up happening between the treaty with Britain and the American colonies, or this new American Republic, was that Britain started impressing because they stopped respecting our property and our people and so forth. And they were literally trying to teach us the way we treated these people, and we never backed down. Anyway, with that, we've got this promo. We'll be out to these promos and right back with Article 6 of the Constitution. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the Republic Review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so I want to repeat this because I want people to understand that the debt and engagements do not include some of the laws and some of the acts and resolutions. Those are not what they were referring to as engagements. These very specific engagements were the treaties and agreements made with other entities, other governments, Canada, Mexico, France, Holland, all of the debts and all of the agreements entered into contractually that the previous Articles of Confederation was on the hook for. They sent the message, I know I went through this in the previous episode, but they sent a message, fear not, we are going to honor all the engagements and debts that the previous government had made. And before the adoption of, and they add this in a little clause, before the adoption of this Constitution shall be valid against the United States under this Constitution as under the Confederation. Now, another thing I really want to point out, because if you go through the ratification debates, it was very clear that they weren't just evolving and taking the next step in moving from the Confederation to this constitutional republic or hybrid constitutional republic. This was a new government. The old government was washed away and they created a new. They used a lot of the same building materials within the Articles of Confederation. They kind of merged them into the seven articles. But to be very clear, this was a new government. Henry kept on saying it was a new government, and Madison even agreed with him. Yes, this is a new government. They've created, instead of having a body of legislatures who had full discretion at that point between being, the judicial as well as executive, by splitting it up, they made it so that there was a balance of power between the legislative and the executive and the judiciary by having three separate entities and ensuring that one couldn't take the roles from the others. And this is one of the reasons why Federalist Paper number 49 was even written. And I would recommend anybody reading it, because it talks about what do you do when one branch of government starts usurping the powers of the other branch? Well, the same question goes with what do you do when the federal government starts usurping the powers of the states? The answer is republic review. It forces the people and the states to step in and say, okay, the Constitution says this, and hey, bench, SCOTUS, you have no jurisdiction over these things. You couldn't make these. You should never even have reviewed these cases. You wasted taxpayer money and time. You need to send these types of things back, because if it's not within the enumerated powers, you have no jurisdiction over it. That was clearly settled in every single one of the ratification debates. And then done. The SCOTUS will actually have their hand slapped, and they will recognize that they don't have that. We'll formally spell that out. That's one of the reasons why Republic Review is going to be so instrumental in actually getting the government to understand what its boundaries are and how it has to operate moving forward. And we will also be able to put checks that Madison and even that nefarious little squirrel, Hamilton, even alluded to, that the states will have to put barriers so that the federal government will stay within its boundaries. Anyway, the second clause or second section to Article 6, this Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States shall be the supreme law of the land. Now, this is the sad news I have for those, and I'm bringing up the Northwest Ordinance, because people said, oh, well, the Continental Congress said we're supposed to use the Bible. Now, this new Constitution said that, and what does the Bill of Rights state? Because, and as a matter of fact, going through the ratification debates, he said this is an enumerated Constitution. If it's not enumerated, the federal government can't meddle with it. So in other words, technically, they had no power of dictating that the Bible would be used, that they could set these standards regarding education, because there was no enumerated power regarding education either. And so the real crux of the matter is even though the Northwest Ordinance was interesting, it was not and could not be considered law or an amendment to the Constitution. Now, they did amend the Constitution after the Constitution was written, and it's called the Bill of Rights. Did they include anything? Yes, they actually included amendments that made it even harder so that they could dictate Bible, that the government, federal government, can make no law respecting the establishment of a religion or the free exercise thereof. So I know that there's a lot of theological people that read these things and say, oh, this is it, this is it, this is it. But no, the Constitution's really clear. It has to be amended before you can actually, it has to be enumerated. And the only way to enumerate those things into the Constitution is to amend it. And if the federal government was going to take on the responsibility of education and Bibles, I'd be the first person to stand up against that. I truly believe that's the role and the responsibility of the state. The intent and design of this hybrid constitutional republic was to give them very limited powers for national security to ensure that we would have the best protection possible. And I'm telling you what, this system created the best protective government in the world, so much so that they actually was able to get outside these boundaries, and now they've become the most tyrannical government in the world. And I am here to tell you, my friends, that understanding these things, like I said, this really isn't that hard. This isn't rocket science. Anyway, so in other words, that shall be the supreme law of the land. And this is section two still. And the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything with a capital T in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. So in other words, the judges in every state are then bound to adhere to this supremacy that anything, and I'm going to give you the example of what that thing is with Section 2, emergency powers. The states have created emergency powers for governors to be able to do good things to help and protect their citizens. Oh, guess what? The Constitution is supreme over emergency powers, and clearly they cannot create laws that are restricted, and the states are restricted from actually creating because of the 14th Amendment. This is why we go through this. Friends, really quick, I just want to tell you that if you go to the Mobius Strip Press page, I'm going to be putting this on Reclaiming the Republic as well as the podcast by the weekend. So you should be able to go to reclaimingtherepublic.org. You should be able to get these episodes that we're airing regarding the Constitution. Download these things so that you can read these things as you're driving along, going back and forth to work, and you're going to become very smart in understanding the Constitution. But more importantly, there is a statement that we've been posting and quote-unquote socializing with social media in trying to get people to sign, actually send President Trump a statement that basically comes out to, and you know what, in the next episode, or not episode, but after this break, we're going to be about 2.5 minutes from a break. So once I finish Section 6, I will pull up this very specific message I am asking you to send to the White House. We have the link to contacting the president. You click on that link and it'll take you to the contact the president or contact the White House. And you just cut and paste this message so that President Trump gets the message that he has the authority to use the DOJ to remove any public servant who has violated their oath of office. And this is one of the things we're using for this First Amendment right of petition. So anyway, I want you to understand that the states are bound, the state judges are bound thereby. So when a state judge actually rules in favor of a tyrant violating his oath of office and violating the Constitution, the supreme law of the land, that judge has violated his oath. How do I know that? Because right here is Section 3. And this is the interesting. Section 3 ties directly to Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. In other words, Article 6, Section 3, and the 14th Amendment, Section 3, are symbiotically linked. And is it a coincidence that they're both Sections 3? I don't think so. I think that's exactly what the intent was. Section 3 of Article 6 states, the senators and representatives before mentioned and the members of the several state legislatures and all executive and all judicial officers, both of the United States and of the several states, shall be bound by oath or affirmation to support this Constitution. but no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States. Now, we're going to get into this, and I'm going to highlight it right now, no religious tests, because this is really important. I want to kind of highlight that. But I also want to highlight the judicial officers who are supposed to take an oath of office, as well as all representatives and all this other stuff. And so when we come back after the break, I'm going to read the statement to you that I'm begging you to actually cut and paste this. It's on social media. If you're already following me, then you could just go to the Mobius Strip Press page. If not, then you can go to Reclaiming the Republic, and we will have it on the Constitutional Perspective page this weekend. We want everybody to start sending the White House the same message. Grab these tyrants and remove them from office and ban them for life per the Constitution. And then we're going to do some follow-on messages, because the president is bound by his oath to do this. So we're going to prove all of this so that we can actually take our country back.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobius Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobius Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so here's the message that we've got out on social media. This is the message we're going to be posting out online. Please share and send the following statement to President Trump via the, quote, contact the White House, close quote, via this page, and we provide you the link to that page. Here is the message. President Trump, our economy has been decimated with this unconstitutional shutdown. This is because state governors have violated their oath of office by directly violating the Constitution, by making and enforcing laws that violate Section 1 of the 14th Amendment. Section 1 clearly states, quote, no state shall make or enforce any laws which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of the citizens of the United States, close quote. Consequently, orders that U.S. citizens cannot assemble and go to church to worship and prohibiting the free exercise thereof are only two examples of unconstitutional tyranny. These public servants are supporting open rebellion with these laws, and in major metropolises around the nation, public servants who support protests, property damage, and seizures, as well as physical harm, are also in violation of the Constitution. Public servants who support either or both the shutdown and laws and protesting in any form are violations of the Constitution, and they are disqualified from public service. And in accordance to Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, these rebels to our laws and our civil processes must be removed immediately and banned from public service for the remainder of their life, as defined by Section 3 of the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. To be clear, the 14th Amendment supersedes all state constitutions, quote, Emergency Powers Acts, close quote, and ignorance of the law is no excuse. There is, and what I need to do is I actually need to put in a little line here that the U.S. Constitution is supreme to all state constitutions and all laws in pursuance. Bottom line, the 14th Amendment is the Constitution. It is supreme over these Emergency Powers Acts and Emergency Powers Laws. Going on, to be clear, the 14th Amendment supersedes all state constitutions, Emergency Power Acts, and ignorance of the law is no excuse. I'll just put the supremacy right there. That, to be clear, the 14th Amendment supersedes all state constitutions, Emergency Powers Act, and the U.S. Constitution is the supreme law of the land. And ignorance of the law is no excuse. There is a reason why all public servants must take an oath of office, and when they violate it, in the words of Senator Howard, they have committed moral perjury, and it's quote, moral perjury, close quote, and are no longer fit to serve. If one believes the right to protest is a constitutional act to block thoroughfares and sidewalks, then one is misinformed, and I would suggest all research what happened in our first Constitutional Republic's protest called the Whiskey Rebellion in 1791. 24 people were arrested and 2 were convicted for treason. Please use the DOJ to remove these tyrants for treason. And that's a exclamation point, ended with an exclamation point. So I'm asking you to take that and send your other feelings and other notes to the president. We need to communicate that he has all the power necessary. He doesn't even need to use the courts. He has the power to remove these people because it is his job to faithfully execute. So I'm going to actually create a second sentence or a second statement to help him understand that the Constitution has vested in him the authority to enforce the laws of the land, to faithfully execute them. And if he does not do this, if he does not remove these people, then he is derelict of duty himself and should be removed. There we go. We need to start sending these messages, folks. We need to start using the Constitution as our weapon. And so we're planning on getting this Governor Inslee, if we can get people to start signing this petition. I'm just way too busy to do all the legwork for everything. I can't do everything, folks. That's why I need your help. Get this message out. Again, we're going to be posting this. If you're following us, it's on the Moby Strip Press page, and I think that's open to the public, so you could just go and grab that. It's one of my posts. I have a pinned post that basically tells people that we do not regurgitate the news on this page. We only, go into the constitutional factors. So anyway, hopefully this can help send that message. You can be integral in getting rid of your tyrannical, despotic governor. Anyway, so let me move on. There are some things I wanted to cover in Section 3 of Article 6 of the Constitution. First off, it mentions that all representatives and senators and judiciary, state legislatures, executives, and so forth, they are mandated in accordance with the Constitution to take this legal oath that they will support the Constitution. Okay? What it says is both of the United States and of the several states shall be bound by oath or affirmation. To be very clear, the words are to support this Constitution. And so what that means, folks, is when there is a problem, when somebody is violating it, can you just sit on your hands? So let's say, you know, Governor Inslee is fully aware of the fact that Mayor Durkin has gone over and beyond in supporting rebellion against our laws and the Constitution. Now, when people say, well, it wasn't directly directed at the Constitution, no. But what she did was she actually supported insurgency of taking and seizing laws. These people were actually breaking the laws of the land and therefore engaged in insurgency of our Constitution and our republic and making an autonomous zone. She gave aid and comfort. She violated her oath of office in not supporting the Constitution. It's one thing if these communists say, we want an amendment to the Constitution to create, you know, Black Lives Matter. We want an amendment to the Constitution to create an autonomous zone. That is the process. And so what they have to do is they either follow the First Amendment petition to, you know, petition government for the redress of grievances, or they start working at voter initiatives to convene or to get an amendment to the Constitution to create a constitutional form of government. But instead, what they've been doing is they've been usurping and violating our Constitution. Do you see how we're protected? How brilliant this document is? Because if it's not done via an amendment with absolute ratification, with three-fourths of the states, it does not become force. And so that's why people say, oh, they're going to eventually take away our guns. Folks, you should start worrying when one-third of the states, we're down to only one-third of the states are willing to stand up for our Second Amendment rights and the militia. That's when you start worrying, because right now we're well above that. It's only the dark blue states that are actually yammering that they want to, you know, amend the Constitution to get rid of that. But see, here's the thing. You know, there are other things that are integral in the Second Amendment. That's why, what is the real problem? If you look at the need for the militia and the integration of the militia, they actually have to amend the Constitution to get rid of the militia as well. And then they have to come out and say, well, we're going to give the federal government the ability to enforce all laws. Are you kidding me? Now we'd even have more states actually standing up and saying, no, we don't want the federal government to have those powers. And this is why understanding and having this dialogue and making these statements to Trump, this forces the dialogue and this forces issues that people will all of a sudden start, you know, actually having the conversation. And in doing so, what's going to happen? They're going to get smart. They're going to get educated on the Constitution. That's the best thing. That's the whole part of all of this. People shrug from having conversations. You know, the political correct position in not having conversations regarding the Constitution, in not allowing conversations in the workspace regarding the Constitution, not talking about politics. We're not talking about what the Democrats want, what the Republicans are trying to do. The Constitution is not politics. It is our civics. It is the supreme law of the land. It is the law and the system. And this is not about interpretation. It's, if you want to understand the interpretation, just go and copy and paste what Madison said in the ratification debates. Mr. Iredell, Mr. Nicholas, Mr. Wilson, Mr. Pendleton, all of these brilliant men were very clear. Even just Samuel Adams and John Hancock. I don't know why I kind of married those two into the same. But they were integral in the Massachusetts ratification debates. When you start reading and understanding, enforcing this dialogue and getting these words out into the public realm, this is where people are going to all of a sudden start having the epiphany. Wow, I didn't realize our Constitution protected us from all of these things. You know how frustrating it is when I poke, you know, people in the eye with, you know, the 14th Amendment, when I poke people in the eye with the concept of Article 7 and that the Constitution is a compact and a contract. And that's what we're going to get back into after we go into this next break. But first thing we're going to go into after the break is this no religious test, because I think that there's some ancillary information that is really important that you understand why this was put in there and why it was never challenged. So with that, we will be right back after these two promos to wrap this episode up and take it into the amendments after this. So God bless. We'll be right back after these two. So we're not going anywhere. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue, to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, so the one thing I wanted I didn't get a chance to harp about, and this, it's the very last clause of Section 3. But no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States. Now, that did not apply a religious test to state offices. So, in other words, states were absolutely free to create whatever test they want to public service. This only had under the United States. In other words, that little line, qualification to any office or public trust under the United States, not under a state or under a county. So if you want to create a religious test, you can. However, there are real problems with this. Now, one of the things I've got to tell you is this one line upset every single state. And as a matter of fact, if I remember, I'm going to do the research going through the ratification debates, at least at the ratification debate level. And I believe I might be able to pull in all of the recommended, because when the first Congress met, there was a query that went out to the state legislatures to request that all the state legislatures provide what amendments they felt necessary and proper to this new U.S. Constitution. And surprisingly, one of those that was a unanimous, all states wanted to remove this religious test qualifier. In other words, all of the states wanted for there to be a religious test, and Madison did not include it. Okay? Isn't that interesting? There is no amendment in the Constitution. What he did was he said that the federal government, Congress, or the federal government shall make no law respecting the establishment of or the free exercise thereof. What they didn't want, and what they were seeking, was actually to allow the states to come up with their own religious tests. And so Madison's argument back to all of them was, whose religious test do we go by? The Puritans? Whose Bible do we use? Because even at that time, there were differences between the Bibles and the doctrines that were extrapolated from these Bibles. So it's caused the Puritans and so forth. I mean, this is one of the reasons why I think it was Williams, the guy that created the Baptist religion, was kicked out of Massachusetts, and I think he was driven to Rhode Island, where, you know, the supposedly real religious freedom was ensconced. The fact of the matter is, folks, is that every state wanted to have religious tests placed upon their public servants, and they never got the amendment to do so. Therefore, it's a little artifact that kind of speaks to, even though the states may want an amendment, that doesn't mean they will get it. And I think maybe if I'm just guessing, I'm using some deductive reasoning here. I am guessing that when I do the research, we will find that by creating a religious test amongst the different states, there would be no uniformity of so, and you couldn't get the states to agree upon that. And that was the real reason why the states surrendered on the concept of there's no point in trying to do this, because we'll never get along, or we'll never agree that this should be the standard test. Because the Puritans would want certain things, and the Anglicans would want others, and all the other different religions, and so forth. And so it just became problematic, and it was best to not. Now, I want to also break into the thought that religious tests today are actually being applied by the liberals, because what they are doing is they're asking Supreme Court justices, and we're going to get a chance to see this in the next couple of weeks, because I believe there will be a process going through where the Senate will actually advise and consent and vote on a Ginsburg replacement. So RGB replacement. So anyway, RBG, yeah, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is that you'll listen to Feinswine, you'll listen to all of these hardcore progressive godless people, and they say, I'm very concerned about your feelings and regarding abortion, you know, because you're a Catholic, and what's your religious position? My friends, that is a religious test, and she's violating that this part of the Constitution, that there should be no religious tests when it comes to homosexuality, when it comes to any type of doctrine that would be considered spiritual by one religion or another. That would be considered a religious test, and there shall be no religious tests regarding that. But you must abide by. So here's the problem with the Islamists that come into office, because they think they can start creating laws, and they think they can actually make changes to the Constitution or do things outside of the process and outside of the enumerated powers. The real problem with all of these people is they do not understand that the Constitution is enumerated. These are the only powers you have, and you can't make laws regarding all these other things. And everything that they're doing, I would expect that the Mohammedans, the Islamists, I would expect them to be frustrated and just leave, because they would realize that their hands are tied, that they cannot. They cannot subvert this constitutional republic like they're doing. And as soon as we actually start fighting back, and as soon as we start getting Trump educated, send that statement to Trump so that Trump understands he has all the power. The next statement we're going to be making in the next week or two is for you to petition the President of the United States to step in and fulfill his oath of office, that he is duty bound to do so in arresting this evil, this insurgency. I honestly think that we can actually send these messages and get these things moving. We're doing everything we can with the We the People Foundation and everything else. But that's a really slow process. But I truly believe that Trump is actually seeing these messages, and the consensus is building as more of these things start getting through. He's starting to realize that even some of his advisors are inept and illiterate regarding the Constitution. And as we start providing these things, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're here to reclaim this republic. And with your help, we're going to be able to do this, because we need to start sending these very succinct messages to our president so that he understands what he can do and what he's obligated to do and what these people should not be doing and how he has the power to stop these things. Anyway, let's get into Article 7, because I want to wrap this up. We're running out of time. Here's the interesting thing. Article 7 is the ratification clause. It actually dies, as soon as the Constitution moves forward. You could actually remove Article 7, but the reason that they didn't and the reason they don't is because it's an artifact. And I'm glad they didn't, because this is what proves that the Constitution is a compact. What does the word ratification mean? It is the formal process of accepting a compact or a contract or a treaty. It is a process. That's exactly what it is. And so Article 7 states, the ratification of the conventions of 9 states. In other words, instead of stating the legislatures of 9 states, this went to the legislatures to have them call for a convention of delegates. So what had to happen is they actually had to have an election where people were elected to represent their county based on apportionment of the county population, just like the states and so forth. And those counties sent forward a bunch of delegates to represent them in this convention to determine whether they were going to accept and ratify the Constitution or reject it. And so the ratification of the conventions of 9 states shall be sufficient for the establishment of this Constitution between the states, so ratifying the same. In other words, those 9 states that ratify this will then move forward in forming and operating this new form of government. Isn't that brilliant? And one of the things that I think is really important that you kind of keep in context regarding, you know, the ratification process and these states, what they were doing here was they were really shutting the door on the Articles of Confederation. They were shutting the door on the standing premises. And folks, whether it doesn't matter really where you stand, there is no evidence that the framers said that, you know, the Declaration of Independence is the supreme law over the Constitution. It's not. The Constitution is the supreme law of the land. It was built and based upon the premises and the principles that were derived, or I should say that were extrapolated, in creating the Declaration of Independence. There were plenty of words back and forth during the Constitutional Convention regarding slavery and so forth that we needed to actually address this, that all men were created equal. The fact that we were keeping slavery was just repugnant to those principles. So now that we've kind of wrapped up the body of the Constitution, we now need to go through these amendments. And so that's what we've got to do. I've got to give you good material, folks, so that you can continually listen to this content, because what's happening in the news is just noise. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.